Ladies and gentlemen, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this Friday edition of the Hagman Report. I am Joe Hagman, your co-host, along with my father, Doug Hagman, who is in the studio. He is just in the office taking care of a few things. He'll be with us in just a few minutes. So I'm going to get the show rolling tonight. And we got a great one, as it's been a great week. And great guest, James Perloff, is going to be on from 8 to 10 tonight. Steve Quayle was on last night, and that was a fantastic show. But James Perloff today, we're going to get into a number of interesting things, folks. If you remember him, he wrote a number of books about World War II and Pearl Harbor and the foreknowledge that the United States government had of the attacks from Japan. Sorry, I got something on my lip there. And he details the memos that were sent to the president days before the attacks happened. And when we look at it for the reasons why, the historical context was for the purpose of bringing America into that war. And I know we're going to cover a little bit of that, but we have a number of other places we're going to go. And there's the sheet I was looking for. The deep state, Donald Trump, Robert Mueller and his corruption, the lies of James Clapper and others. We're going to even get into Antifa and the counterculture of the 1960s. And again, that was after World War II, and Mr. Perloff was a journalist back then, so he has seen the similarities and the differences from the counterculture and anti-war movement that we saw from the Vietnam War to the Antifa movement and political violence that we see today. And obviously, at least in my mind, there is no comparing the two. The only similarities were what we would call the extreme factions of the anti-war movement, the SDS, Bill Ayers, Weather Underground, as Larry Grathwaite, who has passed away, was a guest on our show many times, detailed their plans for depopulation and murder of American citizens who refused to bow down to socialism. Gonna do something a little unorthodox here. We have a lot of news we can cover, a lot of headlines we can hit, but I just want to give some folks an update on some things I've been working on, because I think it's really, really important. And it seems like every time I pick up the research of the RFID chip and what the FDA is doing, what the Department of Health and Human Services are doing, and I let it go for a few months, I come back and there's a whole host of new documents, hundreds of new 100-page documents. Now, what's different about this time around is the language is becoming much more clear as to their goals, their methods, and their plans. There was a time, even 2 years ago, from 10 years ago to 2 years ago, where you really would have to read through the whole document a few times to catch the subtle nuances and the hinting that they would talk around. You know, they would never come out and say, "We want to implant a chip inside you for the purposes of preventative health measures and identification." They would say things like, "We would like to take steps for implementing medical countermeasures." They came up with all these fancy labels and names to get around saying what they really wanted to do. But what's interesting about this time around is that they are no longer skirting around the language of their final agenda and goal. And some of the stuff that I have found, and I have hundreds of papers around me. I've been messing with this stuff for the last 3 days. Is what's really strange and what's really troubling is something that I did report on maybe a year ago that they are now rolling out and implementing full on. And that is the pilot programs and incentivizing the electronic format and health records specifically in children and in hospital wings where children are born. And I, like I said, I got hundreds of pages of papers around me. I know I have it here somewhere. But it is very troubling to see that they are openly pushing for the, what they call, is this implementation of medical devices. Now, just today, and just about every day, there are new laws and regulations published in the Federal Register. And I would urge people who are interested and like to read not only the healthcare and medical changes, but in the Federal Register on a daily basis, there are a host of topics. You know, probably about 50 different topics you can find, from the Department of Education to the Justice Department to the State Department to the TSA. Just today, we've had, the Defense Department has had 4 entries in the Federal Register. Health and Human Services has had 9. Homeland Security, 7. And it goes on and on. And what they do through the Federal Register is subvert Congress in creating law. And this was talked about on our show. I can't remember the name of the guest, but he was on talking about, he was inside the Obama administration's DHS. He was the number 3 guy, I think, there. And he was not fired, but punished for doing his job, and such a good job, of keeping track of terrorists and their affiliations and connections, so much so that they had to go back and delete his work and punish him because he was so thorough at what he was doing. But he talked about a rule that was changed by Obama in 2012 that granted the power of federal agencies to not create law, but go back into the Federal Register and change law without the approval of Congress. Now, that's a very dangerous precedent, because we know, as this republic we live in, how it functions politically is you have the House that creates a law and passes it. When the House passes the law, it then goes to the Senate, where they decide if they're going to pass it or if they're going to send it back. And if it passes both the House and the Senate, the President then signs it into law. Well, under the Obama administration, they have found a way to skirt around this. There can be laws on the book, like the Patriot Act, for example, or NDAA. And any government, federal agency, from the post office to Health and Human Services, can go back and tweak the law to put it in the language which they would prefer rather than what Congress passed. It's really just a subversion of democracy, and it is corruption at its core. But in most of the guidances that come out of the FDA and the Health and Human Services, they have this disclaimer that's always there. It's at the beginning, and it says this: this guidance represents the Food and Drug Administration's current thinking on this topic. It does not create or confer any rights for or any person, and does not operate to bind the FDA or the public. You can use an alternative approach if the approach satisfies the requirements of the applicable statutes and regulations. If you want to discuss an alternative approach, contact the FDA staff responsible for implementing this guidance. If you cannot identify the appropriate FDA staff, call the number listed on the page title of this guidance. So they have a disclaimer at the beginning of every single one of their documents, and I have more here, that basically says these are guidance documents. They're suggestions. But they're different than just normal suggestions, because it seems that all of their suggestions find their way into the law with the same language that is used. So what are we looking at here with this series of new reports from, again, the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, the Center for Biologics and Radiology, the Office of Compliance, there's so much here. It just is so mind-boggling. I wish I could just download what I know in my mind from reading and researching to the audience without having to go through the painstaking process of trying to detail every important fact and change. But I guess I said all that to say this. Changes are coming. And they're not written in stone yet. But the dates are set. There was a time in 2015 when one of the guidance documents that the FDA released stated that they wanted to have this global unique identification system, which is done through the patient identification and health information, RFID type chip. They wanted this done by 2017 in September. And we reported on that back in 2014 or 2015. Well, what they've done is just moved it up a little bit, a few years, to 2020. And the latest revision from the Department of Health and Human Services, as well as the FDA, the Center for the Drug Evaluation and Research, and Center for Biology, I can't say that word, Biologics Evaluation and Research, have all decided and come to an agreement that the specifications that they laid out in their previous guidances, that they update periodically, they were done, and they put the date of completion in the timetable much quicker than they actually were able to implement it. As we've talked about before, this is a slow process. Unless there is a huge catastrophic event that affects the whole nation and even the world, at that point they can turn and say, we have to do this right now, and we're going to do this right now. But if that does not happen, they're going to have to continue to incrementally convince the public, convince, persuade, bribe, threaten the public into accepting this. And in one of the documents here that I will just refer to from April of this year, the fourth revision of the guidance from providing regulatory submissions in electronic format for certain human pharmaceutical product applications. This is the fourth revision. And what is revised here is the timetable from the last guidance that they issued. They say this, section 1, paragraph added, describing rationale for changing timetables for required master file submissions from 24 to 36 months. Section 3, timetable for implementation of electronic submission requests, updated to reflect that the requirement for the master files to be filed electronically takes place 36 months after May 5th, 2015. Anyway, these are just some of the examples of what they have been doing, it's not like they ever abandoned their goal. It's not like they've ever, taken their eye off the target and moved toward another one. Regardless of if we see these things in the news, regardless if I read these documents or not, they are still coming fast and furious, and they are still basically setting the law. Now, what's going to be interesting is to see, under Obama, one of the first executive orders that he issued in 2009 stated that with this innovation in technology in the healthcare industry, that we were going to see an intersection between science and human rights. We have a different kind of president in the office now, Donald Trump, who seems to respect the Constitution, and not only that, is not in the pocket of a globalist group or the CFR organization, the Bilderbergers. He's a lone wolf, if you will, an uninitiated person, as Newt Gingrich said. And I do believe that he wants to put America and American citizens' best interests first. Now, my concern with that is exactly how they're going to fool most of the American people into accepting this. Is it's going to be disguised as a great idea, not only to save lives by preventing medical disasters before they happen, but think of all the children that won't go missing, or the elderly people who have Alzheimer's who get lost. That's how they're going to package this. And I can see Donald Trump, the president, with the massive ego he has, which I don't really have a problem with his ego, except in this regard, because it can lead him to make mistakes, because he will choose to do things instead of for the good of the American people, based on how the American people and the media will perceive the decisions that he made. And again, it will be very interesting to see moving forward if this timetable stays the same and is not pushed back anymore. It will fall under Trump's administration, and it will be interesting to see if he will adapt this. And I can say this for a fact, and speaking for his base, if he did do that, he would never get another vote from an American citizen again. But it's something to think about. It's something we need to be aware of, because it is happening, whether we like it, agree with it, or not. It is coming fast and furious, as we like to say. And again, I just started picking up the research again this last week, after maybe 6 months of putting it aside. And there's enough that would take me another 2 years to go through, just in what they have published in those 6 months of time. So they are continuing to move at a very fast pace. And interestingly enough, one thing that these agencies used to do is compete against each other for the best ideas, for the best quality product, for the best results from the product, the most efficient product. What's very interesting is that they are now working together openly, and they even advocate for this. One of the papers that came from regulations.gov, which was published yesterday, devices proposed for new use with an approved marketed drug public hearing request for comment. In this, they mention that in the FDA's experience to enhance the safety and effectiveness of the marketed drugs that are already approved, and to add the use of drugs that have not yet been approved, they say would add a benefit by not only increasing user comfort and convenience, but they say that by working together, they will seek to ensure a safe and effective medical product that can be brought into the market in a timely manner, in a much more efficient manner than what they were able to do before, when they were working not against each other, but when they were competing with each other. They go on to talk about, they cite an example here from 2005, that the FDA and the Drug Enforcement Administration were on separate aisles of some issue. Well, today it says that after that meeting in 2005, they have been focused on a number of things they agree upon, which are public health, legal and regulatory, scientific issues. And they believe that by working together, that they will be able to be more efficient in bringing and raising the health of the public, in raising the scientific and regulatory and legal issues that they need to clear in order to bring this agenda about. But I'm not going to continue to get into this, because it's a lot. I could spend 6 hours talking about it, and really it wouldn't be that much groundbreaking information if you haven't been paying attention to it. But folks, keep your eye on it. If you have time, just do a quick search of, I'll tell you what. Just go to FDA website. Go to Health and Human Services website. Just read some of their guidances there. I'll post some stories on Hagmann Report this weekend that won't have any opinions. It will just be the title of the important documents and then part of the document and the link back to the publication. I wish I could turn my computer around and show you, because each topic, and Eric, we're not on Skype, so I can't share my screen, but there's one topic here, just as an example. International Council for Harmonization. So they list every guidance that has been written for the purpose of the International Council on Harmonization, and then they have the different subtitles and the dates. Just this topic alone, this harmonization, it has over 35 guidances in the last 2 years. And these guidances are hundreds of pages each. One of them 728 pages. It's ridiculous. Nobody can be expected to read all this stuff. So what I'll do is I'll just post a headline and a link in one story. Maybe I'll do five links and headlines. And if you want to take the time to give it a glance, I would urge you to do that, because again, things are changing. And one of the things that they are going to continue to push for is for this mobile technology, this medical device infringement on our personal freedoms. And that's the bottom line. It's not about, as they say, to help, you know, raise public health, to help the safety and well-being of people, to find out if diseases are in your body before you get to a doctor. These are the stated reasons that they use as excuses. We know what the real reasons are. They're biblical. And they've been written about for thousands
What's
of years.
What's that camera on the tube for?
What's that? The camera in the tube? That went over my head.
I said, what's that camera attached to that tube for?
Uh-oh. Okay. But no, ending this topic real quick, because the old man's coming back in, and we're going to get into a number of things here before James Perloff joins us. This guidance document, mobile medical applications, where they talk about the FDA's extensive variety of potential functions for the rapid pace of innovation and the potential benefits and risks to public health that are posed by these entities and authorities who not only create these technologies, but also do trial and error to implement them. Now, interestingly enough, you know, the FDA already has the laws on the books to be able to implement these when they want to, even though a patient's safety has not been guaranteed yet. They don't know what the outcome could be. Just in this one line alone, they say that these mobile apps and medical devices whose functionality could pose a great risk to a patient's safety if it does not function as it's intended. And they go on to say that some of these devices don't even need to go through a pre-market clarification or a pre-market clearing. They don't have, it's like a, it would be like building a car, 10,000 cars, and never test crashing them to see where their faults are. And that's what they're doing. But again, the Health and Human Services, the FDA, the former Obama administration did a lot of work on this, from issuing the Biosurveillance Council to the executive orders that talked about the intersection of science and human rights, and the laws that were passed under the Obama administration. All the groundwork is there. Just like when we talk about the police state, all the infrastructure is there. If they wanted to impose martial law tomorrow, it would just take the right event. The same thing goes here. All the laws are on the books. All the technology is there. They just need the right excuse, or they need to be able to convince the people to willingly accept it. And they will do that, one way or the other. And if they can't get the people to accept it fast enough with their lies, they'll create that event. And when we look at events that have changed the world historically, and what I believe this issue is really about is what we talk about the mark of the beast. I don't know if the RFID chip is the mark of the beast or not, but this system is exactly what the Bible says it will look like. That you must not only get something implanted in you and become part of the system, or you can't function in society. You won't even be recognized. You will probably be hunted down and killed. And that's what the end goal is here. So when we look at all the, I mean, as bad as 9/11 was, as bad as Pearl Harbor was, the goal was not about to bring, the goal of those were not to bring about the tribulation period. I believe this is. And maybe that's why they're so easygoing when relaxing some of their timetable restrictions that they've put on themselves. But we'll see. And folks, I'll post some important documents this weekend, and I'd like you guys, if you have time, to take a read, skim them, and send some feedback, and let me know what you think, because we're just getting started on this topic, and I can't wait for my father to get some time to sink his teeth in the latest round of information that has come out on the harmonization for the medical device for human use. Because, again, the language is very different than it ever than it has been in history. And this is a worldwide effort. So we'll see. Folks, we'll be right back.
Get the hook. We're going to be right back.
Get the hook.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of end times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced. Blue Wink Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Perrotta's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
Uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
We'll be right back.
And welcome back to this edition of the Hagman Report. Doug Hagman, Joe Hagman, thanks for the first, cover me for the first segment there. I was on, InfoWars with Alex Jones today, talking about,
it's kind of a surprise,
Actually, I was in the middle of a meeting and I got pulled out of the meeting and it was actually elsewhere. And I don't know how, well, I know how I was tracked down, but, look, here's the deal. And I said a month ago, I think, well, no, it was on the 25th. I guess that'd be almost
a month and 3 days ago,
25th or 26th. I had explained, I said the refusefascism.org, the groups are coming and they're planning these, days of rage. Now, you know,
November 4th.
Yeah, and it's too late for the summer of rage, but think SDS, the Students for Democratic Society, times 20. And, this is what's going to be taking place. What? You pointed at me.
Yeah, I remember talking about this in the springtime. You were very concerned
that we were
going to see a summer of of just complete chaos like we've never really seen
well,
before.
Well, okay. And
they tried.
Fair, yeah.
They tried.
They did. And to be fair, look, the plans remain the same. Okay. The timetable is flexible. And that's one thing that they don't have control over is the calendar, basically.
You know, that's just what I was talking about with the medical device.
I heard some of that in the office.
Because the objective and the goals are more important than meeting time deadlines.
Well, right, the implementation thereof. And here's, well, first of all, before I even get into that, I want to say thank you, thank you, Connie K. Really appreciate your email. Connie, thank you so much for that. And also for, I don't know if, can I say your name, Narina? Thank you so much for your email as well. South Africa. My goodness, great to hear from you in South Africa. And I do read my emails and, want to say thank you. But here's the situation. November 4th of this year is what the, refusefascism.org, this group is planning. That's the day of rage now, or the day of revolt. Who is Refuse Fascism? It's a group that was started after the inauguration of Donald Trump. And anyway, here's how this group came about. And the founder is a guy by the name of Robert Avakian. No, I'm talking about Refuse Fascism. Right. All right. Refuse Fascism. And they have a manifesto, just like the Communist Manifesto. And they believe in the illegitimacy of the Trump Pence presidency, vice presidency. They dislike Trump with a passion. They believe that Donald Trump is illegitimate. And, well, on the grounds that he's a fascist. Okay, noting that Hitler himself came to power through the process of elections and established legal procedures, Refuse Fascism has charged that Trump has made clear that he intends to radically attack the rights of immigrants, Muslims, black people, women, gay, and trans people, and disabled, and many others who have been historically oppressed in this society. This is the manifesto of Refuse Fascism. You better turn that on if you want to talk.
Right. Sorry. They're accurate in a way. Right. I don't have my headphones in. Because he is coming against, Muslims and immigrants.
But
illegal immigrants. Muslim terrorists. They leave those distinctions out, and they want to just pretend like he's attacking innocent.
Right. And yes, you're correct. But this all goes back to the redefining and transformation of America, the fundamental transformation of America by Barack Hussein Obama. This is Obama's legacy. You look at Refuse Fascism as a group, as an entity, as an agenda, and that is Obama's legacy in this country. Because you are correct, and comparing, Trump to Hitler, of course, we see that happen, but nonetheless, it's very clear that Refuse Fascism is itself a fascist organization, because we gotta be. That they will, They're accusing Trump will pursue a geopolitical policy that will be very short on facts and long on aggression. Threats of aggression, insane nuclear proliferation, torture, and threats. I'm not going to read all of this, but understand that this is just a group of bad people, that intellectually bankrupt people and spiritually and morally bankrupt people.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now,
I mean, in the way that you just said, or how they described the comparisons between Hitler and Trump, I guess Obama and Hitler, you know, were the same. I mean, they were both presidents, right?
Well, they're saying that they both achieved their status through the electoral process. But what gets me is Donald Trump has already begun to see the government with Christian fundamentalist theocrats. Now, consider that statement, all right, as opposed to what? Muslim fundamentalist. Okay, the Refuse Fascist organization embraces, in my view, in my personal opinion, embraces this idea that transgenderism is normal, that black activism is justified, that Muslim terrorism is actually a response to the oppression. And if anything has any merit, the latter, with respect to the, because of the bombings in, we'll say, in Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan, if you look at how that has played out, you try to justify the war in Iraq based on current day knowledge, you're a little bit hard pressed to do so. Justify the overthrow of Gaddafi, a little bit hard pressed to do so. But having said that, if any of this, and none of this has merit, but if you were to stretch, kind of wince and look, there's that. But here's their plan, and we have, I talked on Alex Jones today about this. We have investigators that have gone undercover, are undercover, and I'm not going to get into the locations, but just suffice it to say this.
They're so deep undercover, we can't find them. I'm kidding.
Well, that's not too far off, let me tell you. But the fact is, they've created legends, and if they're checked on, and they are checked on, we're talking about, and I spoke the last time I was on Alex Jones, I talked about, it was on the 25th with Alex. I think I was on between that time with Owen Schroer, but it was on the 25th with Alex, and you can find it on YouTube or his channel. The fact is this, these meetings are being held in locations where, in secret locations of various groups that are branches of Refuse Fascism. And the street operatives are being checked out before they're being invited. And once they're invited, they're being frisked. And once they're frisked, they're being, all the cell phones go in a bag, and there's, you know, basically they're not allowed to record it.
So they're like an unreligious type of Freemasonry.
Unreligious? No, you know, no, I wouldn't even classify it as that. I would look at this as a growing army inside this country. All right. Now,
what you said with the Weather Underground, the SDS, and
yeah,
well, they had that same mentality. Larry Grathwell talked about their discussions they had.
Yes, yes.
And their plans, which were basically the decimation of the American people through murder of anybody they disagreed with.
Yep, that's what it's a Weather Underground 2.0, and it's on steroids basically at this point. Now, where were they getting their funding, for example? And who really founded Refuse Fascism.org is labeled as an organic movement that had its start kind of out of nowhere, and it's a collective effort because of the election of Donald Trump. Well, the founder, Robert Avakian, is actually the vice chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party USA. And many of the Democrats, if you can understand this, Communist Party USA has got that, is related to the Revolutionary Communist Party USA. Just, they're like cousins, if you will.
Same with the Bar Association.
Bar Association?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well,
I
know where you're going. I think that to really get into that part of the discussion would be a program.
Yeah, I'm not saying all lawyers. I'm saying the Bar Association.
But, okay, so you've got Robert Avakian and as the chairman and kind of the backer behind this. Well, okay, so who is he? He's a 70-some-year-old guy that, again, is the vice chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party USA. And that's a relative to the Communist Party USA, which many of the so-called progressives in Congress are behind or are a part of. And from that, you get the Congressional Progressive Caucus, of which 71 members. There are 71 members to that. So it's interesting to see how Congress is tied into the communist movement here in this country. Senator Joseph McCarthy was right back in the 50s, and there's communist infiltration. And as we go forward, you see the communist Muslim axis, as discussed by many of our guests. But who's the money behind this? Where's the funding behind this? When you follow the breadcrumbs, and this does warrant some forensic accounting investigation. Alliance for Global Justice which was founded back in 1998 by members of the Nicaragua Network, Central American Network, that was created back in 78 or 79 to support the Marxist Sandinistas. So, you know those Che Guevara's t-shirts that you see? As a matter of fact, the West Point cadet, the West Point grad, with the communist photos.
The hip-hop hero.
Yeah, exactly. This is the outgrowth, or that was the outgrowth of this. Now, the Alliance for Global Justice. Now, and this is important to understand, because here's what's going to happen. November 4th is their day. Is their day to kind of to cause all sorts of disruptions and to burn buildings and such. Whether this happens, I don't know if this is going to happen necessarily on that day, but I do know this. These people are arming up, and they are meeting. As a matter of fact, I mentioned this to Alex. I said, drop by their meeting at Genuine Joe's Coffee Shack in Austin tomorrow at between 3 and 5, because that's where they're having their meeting. Genuine Joe. Hang on a second. Let me get you the exact location here. If you're in Austin, you can drop by and tell them how you really feel. Genuine Joe Coffee House, 2001 West Anderson Lane, Refuse Fascism General Meeting, and that's going to take place tomorrow from 3 to 5. So if I was in Austin, I'd drop by, and maybe you'll see somebody there. Well, no, you won't.
I'd bring some beanbag shotgun rounds. I don't know if I'm just tired or if it's just me being in a goofy mood right now, but the thoughts that went through my mind as you're, you know, reading this. And If you do want to go out and give them, not show your support, but we hear so much now of protests and counter-protests, I would just urge people to stay away, because these people are violent. They opportunities to be violent.
That's the thing.
And we don't need to feed them.
There's violence coming. Their mantra right now is act, agitate, and organize. And of course, the only reason they're not as powerful as they are, and perhaps maybe because they're as powerful, they're this powerful, is because of their decentralization. And what I've noticed here is that the FBI, the federal government, is less interested in their activities. The local state county governments, or local county and state police, are more interested in what's going on. And trust me when I say this, all of this information has been shared with the applicable law enforcement authorities, anything that's relevant and important. But having said all of that, by the investigators who have infiltrated these groups, and you, of course, will find out if we hear of a specific threat, regardless of anything else, we will let you know. But at this point, it's all just kind of getting together, organizing. What are we going to do? November 4th is the day that they're looking at. But I would caution people. November 4th, to me, is just the start. Based on everything I've heard from the infiltrators, November 4th is the start. And here's their goal. They want to drive out Donald Trump, period, out of the government. And the refusefascism.org, even their statement on their website, which is printed out here, and if you're listening on Global Star, you can't see it. Or BTR, you can't see it. But it's the call to action, drive the Trump-Pence regime, drive out the Trump-Pence regime. In the name of humanity, refuse to accept a fascist America. Yet their tactics are fascist to their core. And this is what we're looking at. We're looking at a number of local groups of these kind of individuals who are gathering all across the country. at various times. And as a matter of fact, they're published on refusefascism.org's website. If you want to go there, you can get the local meetings and do with that information what you will.
Well, Dad, let me ask you this. Obviously, they have been planning this for a while. We've seen the history of their violence.
Yes.
They are not shy even about stating that they plan to go on and commit more violence on these days. Do you think we will see the continued police crackdown on the masks and the carrying of weapons of these groups of protesters and Antifa people? And I ask that because, you know, when we look at the chaos that can be created just from the police standing down, if they have this day of rage and the police are not proactive about it, what you have been talking about for a while could actually come to fruition, and it could get out of control very quickly.
Well, I think the police are, look, the local police, the police that we've interacted with, have had direct interactions with, are concerned. And if they take any orders from the brass of stand down orders, I don't think it's going to be received well by the rank and file members of the police that we've talked to. So the bottom line is this: they could very well issue stand down orders. These are violent groups, in my view. These are violent groups in the view of the police we've spoken to. Are violent groups, and I'll tell you what, half a dozen various municipalities across the United States, and the usual strongholds. You got New York, you got San Francisco, Los Angeles, you've got Austin, some of the more liberal strongholds across the country, but even into the heartland of America they exist. And I want to tell you this, that even though you think, for example, you might be safe in Topeka, Kansas, there are still these elements of these groups who are gathering together in the basements and in different areas, who are planning this overthrow of the United States government. And they're not shy about it, but they're also planning to do this. They're also planning to, they're planning violence against police officers. They're planning to disrupt any politically conservative politician, elected official in their town hall meetings. When I say disrupted, I'm not talking about just shouting them down. I'm talking about really causing disruptions. I'm going to leave it at that. I'm not going to get into the specifics on that, because that was asked not to in one case. And in another case, we have found, and I cannot get too far into this, and I respect the investigators, the commissioned investigators, law enforcement officers who have asked us to hold off on some of this information. That doesn't present a peril to you. But we've found in one case in particular where we have city officials, people working for a city government. Now think about this. People working for a city government who are actually providing providing assistance to the refused fascism. Now that should scare people. That should cause people. That should alarm people. Not scare people, but alarm people.
It's like the universities who many of the professors in these liberal institutions are the leaders of these types of pro-fascist movements, if you will. Well, they call themselves anti-fascist. And one of the examples the professor who was on TV saying that he loves to teach future dead cops.
Yeah, but you can't...
you can't, but it's just a...
That's academia. We're talking about people working for the taxpayer and government, which
But they've infected all different aspects of our society, from academia to the media to government to even law enforcement, both in a judicial and policing setting. So.
Right. And yeah. And one thing, you remember the movie Jaws, right? We're going to need a bigger boat. You know that statement from Jaws. I'm going to need a bigger board, because you know you've got the revolutionary abolitionist movement announces a Philadelphia chapter. Now you've got all of these different the revolutionary abolitionist movement. If you look at who they are, okay, they're this offshoot of another violent, shall we say, it's a SDS 3.0. And they're holding fundraisers and such, but revolutionary abolitionist movement is also involved in the support of refused fascism, and they're also using webinars. If you can believe this, the webinars are being conducted Yep. For training purposes. And they're using Muslim Islamic terrorist training magazines, Inspire magazine, for one, to teach people how to build weapons and bombs and tactics for a revolution in this country.
They're also using the democratic political base as a starting point to recruit and to spread their message.
Well, yeah, and that's the pool in which they fish. That's the which is fine, given the fact that the ideology of the current progressive base is nothing more than socialism/communism. And so this is what we're getting into right now.
And I would disagree with you to the extent that I would say that actual Democrats in this country, 10% of the Democrats are the Antifa, alt-left kind of crazies, and the rest are probably much more moderate than we.
You know what? I disagree with that. If you look, and I would have said that maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, but I'm going to tell you right now, the average progressive in this country, I don't believe there are any Democrats left. If there's a Democrat, it's going to be the, you know, 85, 80-year-old individual who adheres to the old JFK kind of, that would be a Republican essentially today. But no, I would say the vast majority of the people on the left of the political spectrum are inherently against anti-government or anti-Trump, I should say, and they're dangerous. They're dangerous.
Yeah, see, it's not. The weird thing is it's not anti-government. It's anti.
It's anti-Trump.
It's anti-constitution. Because we saw the Tea Party movement. You know, you and me both were. Would be considered anti-government back in the, you know, 2008, 2009, after 9/11.
Right. I suppose you're accurate in that respect. But look, Indivisible is, they've published a guide. Indivisible, they've got a premier guide to resisting the Trump agenda. This is all anti-Trump. This is all anti-conservative. This is all anti-Christian.
And that was paid for with Hillary Clinton campaign.
Right? Yes. 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 You got moveon.org. You've got hashtag all of us as an agenda or as a topic. You got the Working Families Party, which is a quasi-Marxist party founded in 1998. You've got People's Action, which was founded in 1972, which relates back to people like Carl Dix and others, and they've got a national presence here, People's Action, by the way. But having said that, the Center for Popular Democracy, which is we don't have time to get into all these, but suffice it to say that you've got These organizations are funded by the various foundations. You've got the Bauman Foundation, you've got the Ford Foundation, you've got the Democracy Alliance that's funding this. But the problem I have is when you start looking at where the nuts and bolts of all this is leading, or where the nuts and bolts of the organization is, it can be traced back to Organizing for Action in each case to some extent, but it's only a little bit.
Andrew Kerr's investigation into Media Matters, how there were 14 different quote-unquote separate political packs, political organizations that all shared, you know, a 20-by-20 office. They were separate in name only, and Kerr proved how they would take the money and funnel it, you know, throughout all the organizations.
Kerr did a great job.
It was basically one giant organization camouflaged as a number of separate ones.
I got to tell you, Andrew Kerr did a great job in his work, and that's and we've seen this here as well. You've got refusefascism.org, and I'm looking at my notes here because they're pretty extensive. The findings are pretty extensive. In one case, you've got in one case, a local group of Refuse Fascism share office space with a very well-known opposition research group. Now, I can't tell you who this is, and I'm not going to tell you who this is or where this is, because that would compromise the operational security of one of our lead people. But you think it through. Just think it through. You'll get it if you're at all up on just opposition research. Okay, you'll get it. And the targets, of course, they will be targeting the police. They will be targeting the churches in this country. By the way, that's a big target right now. The rumors, the talks, innuendos, targeting Christian evangelical churches and the people that run them. And oh, by the way, you're not safe if you think that you can show your patriotism by wearing a red MAGA cap or a shirt or whatever. You're a target. Now, does that mean that you should shirk from that? No, of course not.
No, but you will be specifically targeted.
Yes, yes. So this is, I just want to give an update. And did I talk about this today in my show? Maybe a little bit.
I'm not sure, but we have about 40 seconds before the break, and I want you to hear this. We got an email from a Mr. Gary P. in England.
Okay.
He says, "Dear Doug and Joe, I have wrote this email to thank you both from the bottom of my heart. In the space of 3 years, I have lost my mother and a brother. And all the while, I have never met either of you. I would like to thank both of you, as watching your show over the years has really helped me. God bless you both, Gary in England."
Well, Gary in England, I want to say thank you. And lost as in passed away?
Yeah, yeah.
Look, I couldn't imagine. I mean, in that time frame, I couldn't imagine. We will be praying for you. Thanks for listening, and we consider you part of our family. You're listening to the Hagman Report. James Perloff, a guy that you know, a guy you're going to love. If you haven't heard him, this is the first time. Coming up next. Stay with us. Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right? You need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greenovative.com. That's greenovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.